and welcome to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. This is your host, Andrew Horowitz, and we are all the way to episode number 41. You want to hear something amazing? I did some statistics over the weekend and found that we have over 250,000 downloads in the last number of months. And if you want to check out where they're coming from, and iTunes or Windows or Zoom or any other place, you can go to the site, thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Check it out. There's some interesting things there. And I want to thank you for your support. Let's kind of get into what we're going to talk about today. First of all, we have a great guest coming up, John C. Dvorak from Dvorak.org/blog. He is a good friend of mine, and he has always been right on the mark when it comes to technology, and also a great writer for MarketWatch about business and technology. And I'm going to ask him some questions because I want to know about what happened at CES. He was recently there. I want to know what's hot, what's not. And I also want to know about if there's any opportunity to make some investments right now, because I'm telling you, these markets are really, really tough. We have talked since July on this particular podcast about getting out of the market, that it was just beginning, and the nonsense that has gone on and the outright thievery that has gone on by many of the mortgage companies, and you know, the ilk that has been just bleeding, systematically blooding the American people by utilizing all sorts of sophisticated things like derivatives that no one understands, even themselves. And by allowing that to happen by the Fed and the various government bodies is an outright crime. And unfortunately, I'm going to tell you something. I could sit here and tell you all day long that, hey, we could write our congressman and forget about it. You know, you can't do anything about it. It's the way it is. And what you have to do instead is just figure out a way to invest around it. That's the trick. Because, you know, at the end of the day, the average Joe, you and I, get screwed left and right. That's not going to change. What you have to do is realize that you're going to get screwed and figure out how not to get screwed as they're screwing us. Simple? Well, maybe not. But the fact is that you could do a lot to learn about what's happening. How was it that starting in July and moving forward, I have been pounding the table so strongly about getting out of the markets? And was it somehow, just a guess? No, you know what? It was a systematic approach by using the disciplines that I outlined, by the way, in my book, which you can pick up a copy at Amazon, on our store, at Barnes & Noble. The Disciplined Investor, Essential Strategies for Success. The Disciplined Investor, Essential Strategies for Success. You know, what you find is that you're going to have the opportunities and at the same time avoid some of the problems. Not avoid them entirely, because we're 50 or 60% cash for our clients, and it's been rising ever since July. But that doesn't mean we're totally out of the way, are we? No. Because, you know, if the tsunami comes, you can't get out of the way. It's impossible to totally avoid it. But you can do your best to figure out how not to get totally swallowed up by it. Are you still sitting on the sidelines saying, oh, I'm fully invested, I got 20 or 30 years, don't worry about it? I mean, come on. You know what? I hear you. I understand it's a long-term proposition. I understand investing is for the long haul, no question about it. But that doesn't mean you need to be brutalized and beaten by the markets when we're going through situations like we are here. You don't need to do so. In addition to the discussion with John C. Dvorak, we have coming up a few things. We have the CEOs of Covestor, a great site that you could track your own investing and understand what's going on in the markets by looking at what other people are doing and tracking what they're doing. We also have the head of MSN Money Central, MSN Money site, and the entire division. He's coming on, and we have a few other really great guests lined up, so I'm really pleased, and thanks so much for helping out, making this such a success, and that's why we're getting these guests. So make sure to tell your friends, make sure to give us a review on iTunes if you can, help us out any way you can, because the better we have feedback and the more feedback we have, truly, that's helping us get these big name people to really bring us some expertise and their insight of the markets to this podcast. The other thing I want to mention to you is that on January 31st, we are having an investment course. There's been a big calling for me to teach a course on investing. So go to the site and you'll find a course link for the course. It's a free course to figure out what it is that we're going to be teaching and to understand what we're going to be teaching and to learn about whether it's something that you want to participate in. So go right to the site, thedisciplinedinvestor.com, and click on free course, and you'll get yourself registered for that course. And it's filling up pretty well. So I would suggest to you that you go ahead and do that right now when you hear this. And finally, I think finally on my list here today of housekeeping, I mentioned to you before, a few people have taken me up on it, and I really appreciate that, is to buy a copy of the book, The Disciplined Investor, on iTunes, not on iTunes, on at Amazon.com. And let me know. Send an email to reviews at thedisciplinedinvestor.com, and I'll send you a free audiobook. When we get back, we're going to talk with John Dvorak. I do not have any stock tips today because there are no stock tips, okay? I am going to make a list, though. And as a matter of fact, I did so. There's a list of preferreds and a list of a screen that I did last week of stocks that may really have some great benefit. Go over there right now to The Disciplined Investor. There's two posts that you need to look at. One is from last Friday, the Stock Screen Friday. And there's some great names in there that you may want to look at. And then also there's a list of preferreds from about 4 days prior to that. All right, so when we get back, once again, John C. Dvorak is going to hopefully answer some questions. I have a couple of ideas on a little item that may be helpful to the average consumer when it comes to putting some money in your pockets right away. It may sound a little crazy, but hopefully somebody out there, hello, somebody out there is listening. We need some help here. We need a stimulus package. You can't keep on ripping the guts out of us and then just giving nothing back and giving us a little bit of a teaser. Because that's not helping out, and it's very clear it's not helping out. So stick around. We're going to be right back on episode 41 on the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager.
Hi, this is Timothy Sykes of TimothySykes.com. I am also the author of An American Hedge Fund. You are listening to the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
All right, so we're with John C. Dvorak from the famous Dvorak.org/blog, and one of my good friends that I talk to quite often about technology and business issues. So, John, how you doing?
Good. I guess, how's the weather down there in Florida? You know, sunny California, we've had some pretty good weather, although it's starting to get windy now up here in Northern California.
We haven't had rain in, I think it's been 2 years. And, I have a little lake house up. The kids don't want to go because they said, Dad, there's no lake anymore. It's more like it's just a sand house. Can't get the boat out.
Aren't you getting the afternoon 1/2 hour of heavy rain?
We haven't seen rain in, truly, months. I saw some recently. Today it's down to 60 degrees or so, but it's been awful. It's really been a dry spell like I've never seen it for a long time.
Interesting.
So speaking about dry spells, maybe a good segue, what is going on from your side of the fence when it comes to not only the markets, but you were just at CES, right?
Yeah, I visited the show, took a look around. It's, the CES show is never that exciting to me. It tends to be kind of the same stuff year after year with a few tweaks. Yeah. I never used to go to CES in the olden days, when there was a Comdex show and I was, looking for computer stuff. We tend to go to Comdex and then go to CES about once every 3 years because, that's what the cycle looked like.
Right.
And, of course, CES also had a show in Chicago. They had 2 shows a year. And so you'd go to one or the other. The Chicago show was always in June or something like that. And that was always the better show for a while. Then they kind of dropped that show. But now the big news, I think, out of CES, it's not overreported by any means, is the fact that now they're thinking of moving the show out of Las Vegas, which I think is bull, but I think they're just trying to get better rates.
I mean, they got 130,000 people or so. I mean, the show is big and it draws an incredible crowd, but it seems to me that it is just a really a lackluster event of late. There was a lot of introduction to technologies, or at least there had been, and lately it's just a big show to how big the TV can be and how loud the speakers can get.
Yeah, there's that element. There's good stuff there. I mean, if you really wanted to spend enough time at CES, you'd find all kinds of cool things. The thing is, it's slightly overcovered. It's not quite as overcovered as CeBIT. I think the CES showed maybe 1,500 journalists or something like that. But CeBIT, which has 2,500 booths, typically has 10,000 journalists. Mm. So that's 4 for every booth.
That's a bit thick for my taste. With microphones and questionnaires and pads and pens, but let me ask you. So, was there any scuttlebutt about technology and electronics in the whole time we're in now, with maybe this market collapsing, the fear of recession and You know, what's the kind of the talk in that on that neighborhood? Because really, technology has been the bright spot for some time until the last couple of weeks. It really kind of was almost unaffected, and it was really astonishing. But these days, you know, where was the thinking?
Well, you know, everyone's still concerned about Intel and AMD. And there, the kinds of numbers that they're reporting aren't what people want to see, even though AMD actually did a little better than a lot of people thought. And the real problem, that way I see it, is that there's too much mergers and consolidation. Mergers, as anybody knows who studied M&A, they're great to put together. There's all kinds of money to be made from doing the deals, but they very rarely work out to the benefit of either company because they're hard to digest. I mean, it's like an indigestion issue. Mm. And so you got different corporate cultures, especially in high tech, where the corporate cultures vary widely and radically. I mean, I could exemplify this by one time I was in Brazil and at some awards show, and they gave awards to the same American companies. And I would see these Brazilians go up to, you know, people from Compaq, Microsoft, IBM, Lotus. And I would look at these people and I'd realize that they were all stereotypes of the companies, even though they're in Brazil. The same, you know, I could tell a Microsoft guy,
right,
you know, a mile away.
Right. The IBM guy had the white shirt and the blue suit and the red tie.
Unless they were like allowed to dress themselves, which is a disaster for IBM because none of them know how to dress. But anyway, but the point is that there's a lot of, there's a very heavy corporate culture with these companies. And so when you try to blend them with these M&As, it really is generally doomed to failure.
Well,
it's hurting the business.
Your latest column in Market Watch talks about the recent merger and the whole questionable buyout of MySQL and the suitor that picked him up was, of course, Sun Microsystems. And, you know, I don't understand. It seemed to me from your article that it was more of it's an error on the part of Sun, but yet a real benefit to Oracle. Did I get that right?
Yeah, what I'm thinking is which makes me think that it's a kind of a crackpot article, and there's a few commenters in there that didn't kind of get it, who just said I was crazy, and the thing, none of it made any sense. But the fact of the matter is, there's something suspicious about this deal, and because for one thing, this is $60 million. Your company making $60 million a year, and they bought it for $1 billion. I mean, what's the multiple?
Yeah, no, it's not normal.
Not normal. But and what does this actually do? It takes MySQL off the market. Sun has never done well with its M&As, and I cited a couple of other articles other people have written exemplifying their botched buyout of this and that, especially their attempt to get into the storage game. Anyway, and so I was convinced that somehow Larry Ellison and Oracle were behind this because MySQL is something of a nuisance to Oracle. It's a very much similar product. It's free at the low end. It has all kinds of uses, and it has markets and channels that Oracle can't seem to tap because the product's too expensive. The Oracle product, and who could easily afford to do this deal? Oracle behind the scenes, because I don't think Sun, which is not a company that I could say is rolling in dough, can really afford to make such a bonehead, you know, kind of a buy for $1 billion of a little software company that's open source. It just makes zero sense.
Well, that's the point. That's the point. The open source part of it is really the confusing factor of all this. You know, you have to wonder what the heck is somebody buying the open source company for? Because don't you think that's where the big question comes in?
Well, I think the amount of money that was spent is one of the big questions, and number two, that is one of the 10 questions, but I don't think it's the primary one. One of them is, why do they want this? I mean, that's the big question in my mind.
Right.
Open source or not open source? What's it got to do with their business? I don't see it. So I had, you know, written this thing, and of course now MarketWatch over the last, I don't even know when they started doing this, I think about 2 or 3 months ago. they never used to do this. So you could write these crazy columns just about, you know, making all kinds of interesting analysis without having to worry about commenters like on a blog coming in and just giving you crap about the fact, this makes no sense, or this sentence is no good, and, you know, all this kind of crap that they do, you know, commenters, mm-hmm. you know, these anonymous people, the anonymous masses. And luckily I had a few guys in there that were on my side. If you look at the comments are actually usually more entertaining than the column. And the one guy just says, I forgot who it was, but he says two words, open office, enough said.
Right. You know? Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, so now we have these kind of crazy things going on behind the scenes in a time when the money really isn't that available, right? I mean, we're not in a situation where we're finding that many of these companies really should be doing these kind of these buys. And then, you know, we look at the great earnings, what we just saw from IBM recently. We have in the next couple of weeks, we have some big ones coming out as well. What's your take on what's in store for technology moving forward the next 6 months?
Well, you know, technology always has the advantage of if it gets hot, you know, it leverages and scales faster than any other sector, you know, because you can go from just a company making $1 million a year to making $1 billion a year in less than a year or two.
Yep.
I mean, hyper growth is part of the technology scene. And that's why it's so attractive to investors, I think, because if you know, it's almost like it's a little more gambling than the other sectors. But you hit something, you know, just astonishing to watch this, you know, things skyrocket or crash.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I'm not seeing any particular movement. I still think that the M&A scene is stifling things. I'd like to see more IPOs, but we can't do that until Sarbanes-Oxley is kind of backed off a little bit because it's ruining the economy. I'm not very bullish on tech. At least, I mean, I'll reevaluate in 6 months, but I don't think the next 6 months is going to do anything, to be honest about it.
For a very long time, I've been relatively neutral on markets. I don't want to say that I was bullish or bearish, but I want to say that I was relatively neutral. But the last number of issues that have come to, you know, forget about just the mortgage issue. Forget about, you know, just the fact that they can't seem to stimulate the economy. And I want to talk to you about that in a second. I have an idea. But what is it that is so awful now than, let's say, 3 months ago that almost, you know, anytime a company sneezes, they're taking it down by 20 or 30%? I mean, is this out of control, or is this really what should be going on and plays right into your discussion about this awful, horrendous recession, almost to a point of, you know, economic failure that we're going to get into in 2009, which you've talked to me about many times?
Well, yeah, but we have to have a run-up before that happens, and that's what we have to anticipate. We're not seeing it. We're not going to – although there has been historical precedent for a market just kind of crapping out and dying a slow death and then taking you into a depression, generally speaking – you know, every time this happens, and I've taken it back to, I still think the most solid stuff is in the 1600s. And I got most of the 1600s, 1700s, 1800s all covered throughout this kind of boom bust cycle. And generally speaking, you don't have a bust without a boom preceding it. But there have been instances where you have kind of a slow death. And you also had the very interesting situation that occurred in 1890. Which should have had a market crash, but because of I think the Civil War kind of screwed up the timing of all this stuff. And what you ended up with, you still had the market bottom, which hit in 1893, which is exactly when it should have hit. But you had kind of a mini boom for 2 or 3 years from about 1890 to 1892 or something like that. You didn't have this kind of weird crash, and then the market forces just couldn't deal with it, and you had this what they called the depression in 1893, and That phenomenon is more likely, I think, to happen in this cycle. I think it's quite possible that could happen, where we actually have instead of a crash in 2009, we have like a 2-year boomlet. I'm not saying that's what's going to happen. I personally think there will be a crash, but if we don't have a run up by 2009, then the other alternative has to be that scenario.
Yeah.
But the general idea of the market just dying like now and just going right into a depression peaking in 2013, I can't see any precedent for it.
The only problem is there's just such an enormous amount of pessimism in there, which on most times you want to say, well, that's a great time to really kind of throw money in and start to buy things. My problem is that it doesn't seem that Bernanke is. It doesn't seem like he's moving at a speed that is really reasonable. Number one, number two, if he does in fact move at a reasonable speed, the question still remains whether or not he can really stimulate to the point of taking over for all the problems that were, you know, cast upon the economy due to these. The words I don't want to even talk about, but these bankers, the main reason why we're in this situation due to the mortgages and the failure of oversight, which is clearly, right back to the savings and loan crisis. But I don't understand why we can't have something as simple, just as simple as a credit on gasoline. For example, when I look at economic stimulus. You know, they're always doing something that it takes months and months to do, right? I mean, by the time it gets down to the consumer, to their pocket, retail's usually been just, I mean, trashed, and people are freaking out. There's all sorts of other things that have, you know, offshoots of the problems, you know, and the recession discussion starts happening. Why don't they do something as simple that if they can do, let's say, a 25% credit on the price of gas that, let's say, is at $3 a gallon, they leave it at an exact number, and they give it right at the pump. I mean, again, for just a conceptual way of doing things, or somehow at least, you know, lower the cost of gasoline because there's taxes, of course, on them. This will give a padding to the pocket of the average consumer, the average guy who's holding up the rest of the economy, and therefore kind of allowing to have, you know, a renewed optimism in, you know, that there is something being done and there is something going to be done quickly, because most people are running so scared because they don't see how this is going to get any better.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an interesting theory. I mean, or an approach that could be taken that would probably work, at least to some extent. I just don't, you know, the problem, I think the basic problem is whether it's the Republicans or the Democrats. Historically, the American government has tried to meddle or not meddle as much as possible, even though these, you know, phony baloney tax cuts of Bush's is meddling. There's no question about that. But and I'm not complaining about it, but generally speaking, to meddle more about, you know, to, you know, the price, you know, the right now they're talking about, you know, let's freeze prices, let's give people rebates on a mortgage. Luckily, you know, we took, you know, everyone says these mortgage, the idea of like freezing mortgages at a certain rate because of all these guys who have these negative amortization deals, that may go through, but the number of people that are going to be affected by it is very low.
And again, the point is, while that will help immediately once it actually goes through, because it's going to it's going to give them at least not moving the price up any further, the fact still remains it doesn't help with the overall situation, which is, you know, they need more money now because they were used to buying things on the excessive use of credit. And I'm not saying that was a good thing, but they've become most people have become very accustomed to just spending over what they're making right now. And we need to kind of, you know, take away that drug of choice, if you will, you know, kind of gradually.
You know what? I agree with that on the one hand, but on the other hand, I think let's look at some deeper issues here. One of them is the lack of usury laws. You know, these laws that keep people from gouging the public. I'm talking about the credit card companies, those payday places where, you know, you take out a loan, and if you don't pay it back, like within, I mean, these are essentially institutionalized money sharks.
Yep.
And this system is completely all over the place. Now, you know, a few years ago, if you remember, they changed the bankruptcy law, so it applies to everything but your credit card debt.
Right, brilliant.
Which is scammed up. I mean, I think that the whole system is completely corrupt. You know, we don't even use credit cards anymore. We only use American Express, which you have to pay every month. We stopped using them. We just got off of it because you get caught up in it. Next thing you know, you're paying so much interest. Whatever you got on sale at Macy's, you end up paying twice as much for it because you're paying the bank another, you know, whatever, hundreds of dollars, thousands in some cases. People are in, you know, essentially on the verge of bankruptcy because of the system. And nobody in government seems to care.
They did nothing about it. You know what? This is
This used to be against the law.
I know. It what happened here, in my opinion, was no different than what happened in the late 20s and the 30s when people were allowed to buy too much stock on too much margin and too much leverage. They were allowed to do the same thing, but instead of stocks, because there's laws against that now, they did it with homes. They leveraged it up like crazy. They bought it on their own home. They were, you know, ridiculous where they were just spending too much money. And the second thing, they went out and they bought investment properties. There was no difference in what happened today than what happened back then. None.
Well, the difference was that you could do a small-time stuff then. You could buy, you know, a few hundred shares of GM at you know, low money, as opposed to buying a $500,000 house.
Right.
So there is a difference. But the fact is, yeah, the leveraging. But real estate has always been highly leveraged, and that's really nothing new. It's when it got to the reverse amortization, and I still think credit cards are more a bigger problem in this country, because the housing market is not it's not fast paced. Even though we had a little flattening here. Mm-hmm. It doesn't collapse like the stock market does. I mean, people in an area like the San Francisco Bay Area, where the median price may be $500,000, you know, you have a setback. It drops to $450,000. It doesn't go to $10. You know, it doesn't go to $100,000 for a house in Palo Alto. It doesn't happen. And, I mean, those houses are still hard to get.
Yeah, well, but it's going to happen eventually. And if we don't have, if our dollar starts moving up, you know this. You know, you and I had a discussion the other day about retail and what's happening with retail. And you've been in stores and I've been in stores. And it seems like that everybody but U.S. Americans, if you will, are buying things because our dollar is worth nothing. It's a joke. It's an absolute joke.
You know, so I was in New York last week. Yeah. And so I went to, one of the things I always do when I go to New York is I go to Century 21, which is a retail store that sells all this discounted, high quality brand name discounted stuff. And so I usually get some shirts and ties and things that are like right up to date. I think I was the only American in the place.
Yeah, I mean, and that's not, I don't think you're saying this from a bigoted standpoint. I mean, you're saying it from an economic standpoint.
The place, what was weird about it is the place was crawling with Europeans and Spanish, French, Germans, and they were buying like their own products at about one third the price that they'd buy them in their own country here.
And they're going to turn them around and sell them back to Century 21.
They might. But I mean, the point is that what, there's something wrong with this. This is a skewed, you know, situation when you have when you have people coming over here, and we're the bargain basement. We're like Hong Kong in the 60s. I mean, yeah. It's ridiculous.
Yep. Let me ask you two things before I let you go. Number one, I've had a lot of questions coming in, and the there's a buzz, and I'm not really sure really what the difference is if people know this or not, but this whole idea of, are we in a recession? Whatever you want to use for your benchmark and your bogey, what's your opinion? And if it is, if we're not, what does it mean if to anybody anyway?
Well, I don't personally think we are, but my way of judging these things is a little different. I live in this little town that has a railroad that runs through it at one side of the town, and there's a big freeway that goes by. And when I see the freeway packed like this, you know, with a window of movement that only exists from about 11 a.m. to about 1 in the afternoon, that doesn't sound like a recession to me. And the other thing is, I've been through a recession or two. And when I see those, that, although this may have changed because of the amount of stuff coming in from China, but generally speaking, the tracks get, there's a series of tracks over here that start getting used as storage. And I've actually watched these tracks fill up, and you can almost call a recession when that happens. Hmm. Not scientific. It's
right.
Kind of half fake, but it's coincidental. And coincidental indexes are nothing to sneeze at.
Right.
A lot of them, you know, actually do work.
Right.
And I have not. I don't. I think we're not in a boom time, and I think that's what people are so used to. You know, that if we're not in a boom time, then we must be in a recession. I don't think we're in a recession. I think we're in a kind of a steady state that is not necessarily a hot state. It's just kind of, you know, lukewarm. I think we're in a lukewarm economy.
So let me ask you, so, you know, one of the other things, you know, you do a lot of media, you're on CNBC and you get around doing, obviously, on Marketplace, you write for your blog, you have a very active blog at dvorak.org/blog. And, you know, you do a lot of business related and technology related, you know, commentating and reporting. What, you know, one thing that I've noticed is, maybe, again, coincident indicator, is that historically, when we saw a huge an influx of new business style of reporting or new television stations or maybe something. It seems always when they're at their peak is the worst time for the markets. You know, I mean, it's just everybody wants in on the game. So now these days we have kind of this happening again.
Fox.
Yeah. What's the story with Fox?
Yeah.
I don't hear anything good.
I never thought about this. This is a good one. You're right. You may have stumbled onto another coincident index. Yeah, Fox is getting into the game. You know, one of the reasons, of course, is CNBC. Fox in the past is, you know, they waltzed into the news business and they just blew away MSNBC and whatever CNBC was doing in that regard. They stopped it. CNBC is just all financial now. And then everybody else, you know, and they blew away CNN and they did a lot of stuff because there was apparently a need for their perspective in the market, and you know, that wasn't being served at all by anybody else. So I think it gave them a bit of a overconfidence, because CNBC, in fact, really knows how to do this part of the business, because they've been doing it for a long time. They know that all people want to know is, you know, essentially stock tips.
Right.
It's a stock tip channel that 24/7.
Right.
And it's like, you know, it goes on and on and on with essentially, you know, just, you know, kind of with some good looking women that look smart, not the kind of blondies that, you know, I mean, I got nothing against the Fox women. A lot of them are very attractive and sharp.
Yeah.
But they're, you know, they're stereotyped. They all look like USC sorority girls.
I hear you.
anyway, so that, you know, and so they don't quite understand the financial thing very well. I think they will because they're you know, they don't mind doing one, you know, changing gears. But I think they're a little overconfident. Some of the stuff that I've heard about is eye-rolling. And what I've seen so far, I've not been blown away by. Although some people who have watched it more closely than myself have told me that it's, and I've watched it from the absolute beginning, have reported that it's changing dramatically to try to get with it.
Well, so they wanted to compete, and they couldn't. And I think they were trying to emulate, do something a bit differently. But you know, the people didn't want that. But now we have, you know, news broke a couple of weeks back about the new Yahoo tech ticker, which I still don't understand exactly what it is. Yeah, but it's another kind of business radio TV coming into play.
Yeah, that, you know, they tried this before with a thing called, I think it was Finance Vision or something Vision, Market Vision. I'm not sure. But anyway, I remember when it came out, I was writing for Forbes at the time, and I slammed it because it was so amateurish. They don't really get media at that level at Yahoo, because it's doing TV is not the same as doing websites, right, say the least. So they're putting together a kind of a thing with, I guess, a host and three commentators, including Henry Blodgett, who I believe has reputation issues.
Yeah. Good old Henry. What was that? I think his last call was Qualcomm at 1,000, if I'm not mistaken, or something at 1,000.
So anyway, so they're going to put something together. They're going to make it some sort of a show, and maybe they're going to turn it into a network. But that's doomed to failure, at least.
But it's back to my thesis of when you start seeing these things cropping up.
Hey, we might be at the beginning of another boom, which is what, again, I would predict for like second half of this year in 2009.
Yeah, well,
that would be fun.
I hear you. All right. Well, I'm gonna. We have a couple things that you and I are working on, and I'll tell you I'm not encouraged about the market. I don't see a lot of great things in the technology. I think that still we have some of the players that are going to be there, and I don't hear anything exciting that you're thinking in terms of, wow, this is going to be a sector that's going to be great too. I think there's a lot of questions that need to be answered before we really get back on the bandwagon of being real positive on this economy and a market. And I'm going to write my president and tell him about my gas idea.
Yeah, you should. I like it.
I'm sure he'll pick up the phone and listen. All right, great. So thanks for joining me, and we'll talk soon. John Dvorak, check him out at dvorak.org/blog.
Looking for answers to today's complex financial markets? Then be sure to get your copy of The Disciplined Investor, Essential Strategies for Success, your all-in-one guide to investing. Order now at thedisciplinedinvestor.com or your favorite bookstore. The Disciplined Investor. Together, we will reach success.
Finally, before we do go, I know I think I said that before, but one more thing I want to let you know. Almost forgot. Finance in 5 is going to be a new show that we are going to be premiering very shortly. What it is 5 minutes of finance and information for a profitable future for you. And we've developed this after a lot of study and a lot of understanding what's happening in the markets in terms of not the stock markets, but the markets of what they're looking for, you're looking for, what you want to hear, what you want to know, you want to learn. I'm here to teach. What you can do is you want to help out, you want to be a part of it, that would be great. Send me a question, send me a topic, send me an idea. Send it to askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And if we use your idea, if we use your topic on an upcoming episode of Finance in 5, which is a part of the MoneyCast network that we formed and it's coming out, premiering very shortly, we'll send you a free book, The Disciplined Investor, my copy of my book. And just as a thank you for helping out, you're going to love this show, Finance in 5. So do me a favor, help me out with that. Give me some ideas because I want to make sure that I'm providing you with what you want to know. All right. Hey, thanks for joining us today again. Remember, we have some great things coming up. We have the CEOs of Covestor. We have Chris Jolly, the head of Microsoft's MSN Money. We have just a whole bunch of people lined up. Do me a favor. Send in your request for Finance in 5. Send to askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com and make sure to take me up on that offer. You know what? I really appreciate what all you've done so far to make this such a success. Keep on going. If you haven't picked up a copy of the book, do yourself a favor. In these markets, you need a guide, and that's what it's all about. Check out the reviews on iTunes. You know what? You're going to love what they say about that. You want to go even further? Check out the reviews on Amazon. People are eating this stuff up. They love it. You know why? because nobody else out there is telling you how to invest these days. Nobody's giving you a plan. They give you a stock tip. They give you an idea. They tell you about a mutual fund. No one's giving you a roadmap in these markets and in any markets. That's what I did. I provided for you 248 pages, The Disciplined Investor. Go pick up a copy today. We'll see you on episode 42. Have a safe week. Be careful out there. The markets are rough. Andrew Horowitz saying goodbye for now.
The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.